This is a free download from the BBC. For more information, go to bbc.co.uk/podcasts.
Okay, guys, let's warm up for this podcast, because this is, we've got some really super hot material today. So let's
Hey,
you northern pinko. Focus.
Who let him in?
What are you doing here?
Waving the finger of truth.
Yeah, I'll wave the finger of truth in his face. And
Dirty digit.
Hello, dear listener. Welcome to the podcast. We're going to go around and introduce ourselves. My name is Ian Lee. I used to present Channel 4's 11 o'clock show. After that, I present... Sorry, mate?
Sorry, go on, carry on.
After that, I presented various other programmes. My last significant television work was the breakfast show Rise.
That didn't last long, did it?
Lasted a year, mate. Got paid £4,000 a week. Which, at some points, got less viewing figures than Noddy. After that, it was a fallow period. That fallow period came to an end just as I said yes, I would go on Celebrity Big Brother. I got a job working at LBC Radio. I was able to withdraw from the Celebrity Big Brother programme. And since then, I've been working in radio, honing my skills, increasing my powers, my super strengths, and I've recently won 2 awards. That's me.
Well done, mate.
Kelly Betts.
Hello, I'm Kelly Betts, and I work here.
Catherine Boyle.
I'm Dr. Drake Ramore, and I'm a cardiothoracic surgeon, specialising in spinsters.
And Northern Pinko over there. Red Ken.
Oh, sorry.
Lech Valwenza.
I was falling asleep. You were talking about your career. It's not very interesting, is it? You went on TV and now you're on radio. That's the end of it.
Still do a bit of TV.
Yeah, Big Brother. No one watches that.
Across beds, hearts and bucks.
This is BBC Three Counties Radio.
This show has been really, really good this week, guys. And I think that is entirely down to me, because I have pulled out all the stops to make, let's be honest, barely adequate material shine like a silver turd.
You, talking about pulling out the stops, you're really? The same bloke who said on Monday you were feeling flat and couldn't be bothered, right?
Yes.
And on Tuesday you said, do I really have to do this? Mm. Come on, Kath. Mm-hmm. Let's bonk off.
Yep.
And then on Wednesday you said, let's go for a picnic instead.
I did say that.
It was a nice day.
It was a very nice day.
And then this morning, can't do this, Kath.
Yeah.
It's like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Friday, I'm guessing we haven't got there yet.
Yeah.
Friday, you said, stuff this.
Yeah.
I used to be on the telly.
Yeah.
However, with all of those thoughts in mind, you still turned it around and made it a brilliant, brilliant week.
Imagine how good I could be if I had positivity in this head.
Hey.
Anyway, this happened.
I'm looking for cutlery. Do you know why? I've been inspired by some Nottinghamshire schoolboys.
Yeah, go on, what have they done?
Tunnelled out.
Of where?
Of their school. Pupils at one of Britain's worst behaved schools. Hang on, serious face. These boys got problems.
These guys got issues, guys. Let's sit down and try and understand.
But fair play, they attempted to escape by tunnelling under a 12-foot-high security fence using cutlery pilfered from the canteen.
What issues have they got apart from they are wicked at digging?
In the scheme, apparently inspired by the film The Great Escape. No, it wouldn't. They wouldn't have seen that.
They wouldn't have seen The Great Escape.
5 boys, 8. That's part of their problem.
The Great Escape's not as good as everyone says, by the way, either.
It's all right, though.
Yes, I mean, it's all right.
You're just used to it. If you hadn't seen it before, you go, that is a fair play. That's a good film.
I mean, but it's not brilliant. That and The Italian Job.
See? You're nearly smiling.
Only because you look like you really have to put a lot of effort into doing that whistle.
I'm good at whistling.
You're not, though. I can whistle effortlessly.
Go on, then.
Okay, what do you want me to whistle?
That. Colonel Bogey. Colonel Bogey.
Beg your pardon, don't call me that. Right. Right, so I'm going to...
Okay, this is effortless.
Okay, I'm going to do it effortlessly.
You're having to warm up your lips.
The pressure's on.
You can't do it when you're laughing.
Listen, if you're going to do something active, you've got to warm up your lips. Right. You all right?
Yeah, go.
Stop looking at me. Right, here we go.
Okay, that's good, but that's not Colonel Bogey. That That was nice. Had a bit of a trill on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now Colonel Bogey.
I don't know who he is.
Do you know what? I'm feeling a bit less flat. Bit of whistling. Turns out the milkman was onto something.
Yeah. Can you whistle and hum at the same time?
Not really.
Okay, I can.
Well, that's like one of those sort of Nepalese tribesmen things.
No idea what she says.
They can do circular whistling and that.
Anyway,
these lads tried to get out. They got foiled when teachers discovered what they were doing. Oh, teachers! Andy Roach, assistant head teacher at the 1,200 pupil school, alerted staff. Oh, squealer.
Grass!
To the attempted breakout in an email last week about students digging a hole under the fence to escape. He wrote, a state have filled in the hole and put a metal bar across the bottom of the fence in that area. However, can staff on duty in the backfield please keep an eye on them digging any more holes for this purpose on any areas along the fence? Quite a lot of cutlery was found in the area, presumably stolen from the canteen to aid their digging. So, if staff on duty can keep an eye on students smuggling cutlery out of the canteen. Smuggling.
Daniel, have you finished?
This fence has got spikes on it and everything. That's asking
Daniel,
for a breakout.
You finished now?
Now
Daniel.
Go.
Daniel Radcliffe is only 5'5".
That's news.
Yeah.
I knew he was tiny.
I didn't know he was that way. The Sun, for some reason, have got a height chart of tiny men. Napoleon's quite tall, 5'6".
OK, that's my height. That's a perfectly adequate size.
All right, let's play Who Taller Than That? Right, Kels, you want to play Who Taller Than That? Okay, Who Taller Than That, right?
Yeah.
And I give you people. Who Taller Than That? Gandhi or Prince? Who Taller Than That?
Prince.
You're saying Prince Taller Than That and you're saying Gandhi Taller Than That?
Yeah.
Kelly, you win £5.
Thank you.
Gandhi Taller
Prince.
Than That.
By the way, did you find Prince?
I did.
Your print screen.
Someone put a load of posters of prints on my windscreen, and then it rained, so they were stuck to my windscreen. I couldn't get them off.
Oh, someone keeps talking to me.
Who Taller Than That? Who Taller Than That? Queen Victoria or Prince? Who Taller Than That?
Prince.
Queen Victoria.
Who Taller Than That? You say Queen Victoria Taller
Than
That, and you say Prince Taller Than That. Catherine, Prince Taller Than That.
Yes, I knew if I stuck with Prince, I'd win.
It's 1-0. OK. Who Taller Than That? Here's a good one. Ronnie Corbett?
Oh.
Or Harry Houdini? Who Taller Than That?
Well, Harry Houdini's not very tall anymore, is he?
Well, even dead men are tall.
OK.
Ronnie Corbett or Harry Houdini? Who Taller Than That?
I'm going Houdini.
I'm going Ronnie Corbett.
You're going Ronnie Corbett? You plumb. Ronnie Corbett's tiny!
I know.
Harry Houdini was 7'9".
No.
No, Ronnie Corbett. Harry Houdini Taller Than That. And finally, Prince and Ronnie Corbett. Who Taller Than
Prince.
That?
Prince.
Yeah, Prince is taller than that. Prince is a whopping 5'2". Ronnie Corbett, a mere 5'1".
Oh, Prince is old hat.
There's only 1 inch between Prince and Ronnie Corbett.
Yeah, but a lot of guitar playing expertise. I love Prince. He's good, isn't he? I think he's got a bright future.
Deary me.
He's got a new band called Third Eye Girl, and they're meant to be the best backing band in the world ever.
That's really is great. If you want to join in the flatness this morning, 08459 455 555. We spoke about... Well, no, we didn't speak about funny names. I don't know why you've written this.
You did. It was about Wayne.
Big men.
Oh, we were ruining it. Shh, 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 shh. We did speak about funny names. Laugh. And it was funny and stuff.
I used to live next door to someone in the halls of residence where I was.
Yeah.
Who was called Catherine Boyle.
Hey!
Ooh.
I've heard... I know.
She nearly missed a date with her future husband because of me.
Because you were busy...
playing the sax?
No, because he knocked on my door and I'd gone out and he thought he'd been stood up.
Oh, blimey. You wouldn't have stood him up. Was he a dish?
No, she could have him.
Name confusions. Call me now. 8459-455.
There was also a girl in my hall's residence called Lick Men.
Is that her full name?
Yeah. The poor girl.
So first name was Lick, last name Men.
I don't know whether it was just the full... she was Chinese, so...
Okay.
I don't know how it works. But... She used to get some awful things written on her door. And she was really sweet and quiet.
Yeah,
I felt so sorry for her.
Always are.
Poor old Lick Men.
Lick Men. Well, yeah, OK. I just stopped myself from getting the sack then. Just stopped myself. You all right, Kath? What abuse did you give her?
None. I just felt sorry for her. She carried her handbag in a very dainty way. She didn't deserve it.
Did she?
Mm.
No.
She's a proper lady.
Did she lick men?
Certainly not.
No.
Anyway, it was no one's business.
She did then.
Oh, dearie me. Now, if this were 10 o'clock at night, we'd now be doing phone in with your rude names. It's not, so don't. I've told you about Wayne, haven't I?
Yeah.
It's true. Very devout Christian family, the Kings. Now...
There was a boy I heard in the paper the other day, and his first names...
Yeah?
His first names, they decided to hyphenate. You know, sometimes people can't decide.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
John Thomas.
Oh.
A baby called John Thomas. Now, at that stage, if you're the registrar, you've got to say something, haven't you?
You know, just to let you know, this name does mean Willy. Yeah, this name means Willy.
Are you happy for that for the rest of his life?
If I was the registrar, I would make them have silly names.
I don't think the registrar has that power.
Yeah, but you know.
Registrars, if you're a registrar, can you not talk them down sometimes? Because, you know...
In some countries, it's illegal to have stupid names. Like, you can't be called Obi-Wan Kenobi. It's a character in a movie. Mm. Obi-Wan Kenobi. What's wrong with that? Kelly?
Nothing.
He's Skywalker's teacher, isn't he? Obi-Wan Kenobi.
In France, up to fairly recently, you had to have one out of an official book.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
So, Francois, fine. Obi-Wan Kenobi, forget it.
What's wrong with Kelly? They've had to halt filming on the new Star Wars film because of Harrison Ford.
Well, yeah, they've got to wait for him to heal, haven't they?
Got to wait for him to heal. Use the Force. Is Obi-Wan Kenobi in this one? I don't really know the Star Wars...
He should be in it, shouldn't he?
...history.
He should be in it. Oh, I mean, no, he's dead.
That's what I thought.
But he can still be in it, can't he? They
Ghost.
Can use holograms and that.
Like Laurence Olivier in that musical with Cliff Richards. Mm. Remember that time?
Did he do that?
Yeah.
My mum went to see him in that Heathcliff musical.
Laurence Olivier wasn't in that.
No, Cliff. She said he was in it too much.
He was the star of it.
Yeah, but there were bits where it was young Heathcliff's turn.
Yeah.
But old Heathcliff. Cliff.
Yeah. Oh,
decided to stand at the side of the stage and emote.
Oh, jeez.
In an over-the-top manner.
Give me a call now. Is Obi-Wan Kenobi in the new Star Wars film? 08459 455 555. Kels, do you know if he's in it or not?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm sure if he's not, there'll be references throughout.
They'll have a little nod, won't they?
Yeah.
He was very good.
Thanks. That was me.
Yeah, you were good as well.
Why are you here? I don't mean just in the studio now. I mean a BBC Three Counties Radio. What do you contribute?
It's part of my contract. I have to annoy you at least 50% of the time.
Ever been to Woburn Safari Park, Matt?
No. It's too expensive.
Isn't it?
In it.
In it.
In it.
In it, though.
In it.
In it.
I used to work there.
And?
Flipping burgers. It was better than this.
I was having a whinge about Woburn Safari Park. Leslie's in Luton. Morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Ian.
Leslie, what would you like to say, sir?
Now, you were complaining about 60 quid to get in.
Yes.
Right. That is cheap compared to in 2008 when I went there with my two grandkids, me and my wife and my two grandkids.
Yeah.
And it was 60 quid. But my wife had a disabled badge and we only paid £16.
So?
So
what are you saying? You're saying that she should have paid less because she was disabled?
No, she paid less. £16 it cost us, the four of us, to get in.
Right. Well, hang on.
Which it would have cost us 66 quid.
Hang on a minute, Leslie. Right, let's go back a bit. How much did it cost for you, your disabled wife and your two grandkids to get into Woburn in 2008?
£16.
1-6?
Yes.
For all four of you?
Yes.
You owe me 60 quid, mate. You owe me 60 quid.
But when we got to the restaurant...
Here we go.
Right?
Yep.
That's where it cost us.
Here we go.
Pounds.
Go on.
£49.
£49?
Yeah, in the restaurant.
Yeah, I spent... We had lunch and then we had tea there as well because it was too late to get the kids back. We spent, on those two meals, about 55 quid. And they weren't even meals. This is the thing, pack a picnic. That's the lesson. But they were... It was... And the food wasn't even very good, Les.
No, the meal was very bad.
Hmm.
We had something like... It's... On the menu, the chicken looked so beautiful and nice.
Yeah.
And I ordered chicken and chips and other things, and I couldn't eat it. It was bad stuff.
I mean, I ate it, and I ate the boys' food as well. Trust me, that food didn't go to waste. But I just think, I really enjoyed the drive around bit. The driving around bit.
Yeah. It reminded me of being in Africa, which I've never been to Africa.
Well, hang on a minute. How could it remind you of being in Africa if you've never been to Africa?
Well, what I've seen on the TV, sometimes you imagine things.
It reminds you of when you'd been watching Africa on the TV and you'd close your eyes and imagine things.
Yes.
what were your favourite animals, Leslie?
Well, I've never seen so many animals, because the only time I ever really experienced these sort of animals is watching TV or
imagination
books.
Butchers and books. Come on, you know the answer, Leslie. Your favourite animals were the monkeys.
No, I didn't think we did see any monkeys.
What, you didn't see any monkeys in Woburn?
No, for some reason they weren't there, because we were talking about it after work. Anyway, another thing.
That's the whole point of going to work. Were you sure? You sure it was Woburn?
I think there was a time when the monkeys got ill.
Oh, the monkeys may have been poorly. Oh man.
Yeah. The problem were. Another thing. Embarrassed me, I tried to distract my two grandkids from seeing two buffaloes.
Two buffaloes? What's wrong with two buffaloes? I like buffaloes.
Well, they weren't getting up to anything too good.
What were they getting up to? What were they? What?
Well,
fighting?
I'm not gonna say.
Well, what?
It's.
What were they doing?
No. It weren't fighting.
Were they having a wee wee? Because we saw a giraffe doing a poo, and the boys thought that was hilarious.
No, these two were getting up to naughty stuff.
How did you distract your grandchildren from that?
Well, we tried to sing, talk and things, but we didn't know that they were observing until a couple of days later. I heard they were whispering things around the house. And I said to my wife, bloody hell. You know, they saw what we were trying to distract them from.
What gossip were they spreading about the rhinoceri? What were they saying?
I can't
the buffalo. You can't say. Okay, Leslie, thank you very much indeed. My sister once saw two dogs being naughty in the street. You used to see dogs being naughty in the street all the time in the
70s. They were walking themselves, weren't they?
Yeah, and she said, "Mummy, what are they doing?" "Oh, one dog's got a bad back and the other one's pushing it."
Well, I saw a beautiful T-shirt in Bedford.
Now, I don't know if you're allowed to say this T-shirt on air.
Why not? It was one of those T-shirts...
All right, can I just flag this up? There is no bad language involved, but
it's really bad taste.
It's very bad taste, and it presents a really horrible, horrible image. So
it was at the bus station.
Hang on.
It was a pensioner.
Hang on. If you've got children who are listening, they don't want to hear this. And also, I would suggest if you are of a nervous disposition...
Come on.
It's a really horrible image you're going to put in someone's head.
It was an old lady...
Here we go. I warned you about this.
...wheeling a shopping trolley.
Yeah.
She was having a good old chat with her friend.
You said she was fat as well.
She was corpulent. She was wearing a very tight T-shirt, a pink one, and it had arrows pointing up and arrows pointing down. The arrow pointing up said beauty. The arrow pointing down said the beast.
I did warn you. You're about to hear a series of BITW. Who knows what that means? Not you, Kelly, because you do know what it means. Boyle? Yeah, don't look at it. Matt?
I don't know what it means. I don't have a script.
You should know what it means.
Exactly. Because
it's happening to you now.
You are the byproduct of it. You are the target of it.
Really?
Yeah, you plum.
Yeah, you absolute banana.
Oh, banter.
Not banter, mate.
We could call it that.
Giant
hair
sausage.
Yeah, you big giant hair sausage.
Hair sausage.
Your hair is rubbish.
You smelly bum flake.
And you're a sausage.
Yeah.
I've got two words to say to you.
Cat toucher. Bullying in the workplace.
Travel news for Beds, Cards and Bugs.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Let's get travel news. Oh, that was... Oh, you know you. Let's... Oh, no.
Crazy.
Oh, dear. Go on. I'll introduce you.
So it's a rather quiet start.
I just said I'd introduce you, Nicola. That's now actually... Stop being fun. It's now a little bit rude. I did say I would... You do it. Go on.
Shall we? Shall I?
So, it's the travel news of Nicola Richards.
So this morning, looking rather good, actually.
travel news for Beds, Cards and Bugs.
BBC Three Counties Radio.
Let's get the travel... hang on. Right.
Okay, here we go.
Let's get... Right, you... This is utter... Right, you do it.
Okay.
After I've introduced you! Oh!
I'm too excited.
I know. Story of my life. Right.
Overwhelmed.
Yeah, of course, you would be. You wouldn't get this kind of professionalism with James. Wake up with the whale. What a ridiculous... Anyway, it's not my business.
Oh, no. We're back to that.
We're back to the beef I've got with whale. Next time you speak to whale, tell him I've got beef with him and I want to sort it out mano a mano. Anyway, that's irrelevant. We're really late for the news now, Nicola. That's your fault. We're going to that down. Where's my logbook on? Where's my travel logbook? Hang on.
It sounds like a big book.
Yeah, hang on. R for Richards. Right. Messed up two bulletins in the show. OK, right, away you go.
So the M25 heading anti-clockwise is a lane closed at the moment.
The people I hate now, right, and it begins with M. Who can guess?
Mums.
Morons.
No. It's men who...
Right.
When you're at the petrol station paying, they wave a £20 note in front of you. So I'm there paying. This happened this morning. I'm there paying with my card.
What's that? What are they doing that for?
Well, if you let me finish, Catherine, then maybe you'll understand.
I'm pretending that I'm interested. Go on, carry on.
So I'm stood there paying.
Yeah.
And he's put in exact...
That's very nice. Sorry?
He's put in exactly £20, right? Mm. So he thinks he can usurp the queue by stepping in front of everyone... Waving £20 under Sonny's face, that was the name of the fella today, I took note. Because I asked him to make me a coffee, they wouldn't let me in, so he made me a coffee. Can't get a large one in that slot, it can only be a regular.
Oh.
He...
Just one selfish coffee.
Well, I got it
you
from...
You bought coffee?
Yes.
For yourself?
It was miles away, I would have drunk yours by the time I'd got in. He... I hate men who push in front of me at queues in petrol stations.
No, you hate that man.
No, I hate... Lots of men do it.
Do they? I've never had that.
I've never had that.
Right, OK, thank you. There we go. Hmm? Have you... This, I'm talking to you now, dear listener. Have you been stood in the petrol
they
queue...
They've switched off ages ago.
I know. Have you...
Jamie's gone. It was Jamie.
Jamie can... right. Have you been in a queue in a petrol station and someone has pushed in front of you waving a £20 note and just handed them the exact change they don't even want the receipt? Has that happened to you? It happens to me. I would say every time I'm queuing up in a petrol station...
Is it every time you're queuing up in the petrol station with that man?
No, that I've never seen that man before. I don't know who that man is. Every time I'm in a petrol station, someone will push in front of me, wave a £20 note and then walk out. I am being served at that time. What you're doing is disrespectful. Why is no one even listening to me?
Are you still talking?
Ah, I've got an email. Several emails. Just going to pick the first one off. This is from Tony. It says, Ian, I agree with you. I have been in the petrol station queue loads of times when people have barged in front of me waving the exact money. I think it's rude and disrespectful. The fact that they haven't got...
Why aren't you reading that?
Huh?
Why aren't you reading that? You're looking at me. How are you reading that?
I've memorised it.
Oh.
Who did you say sent it in?
Steve.
Tony?
Tony.
Oh,
Tony. Anthony Stevenson's. From Stony Stratford.
The what fact that the number ending that he texts on?
It's an email, mate. I'm not going to give out his email on the radio. That would be inappropriate.
I don't want it to. Where did
it's
the email...
It's Tony Stevenson
at
yahoo.co.uk. Straight to me.
Straight to his brain, apparently.
Ian, I've memorised it. All right, I'll read it. Not from the start. That would be inappropriate.
Can't remember, can you?
Ian, I agree with you. I've been stood in a queue in a petrol station loads of times. I don't pay at pump. And people often walk up and just wave the exact money in front of the man's face. Just because they don't have to queue up and type in their PIN numbers doesn't mean the queue is invalid.
Looking at me again. What are you doing?
Read that again, word for word.
I don't need to. Tony's point...
Tony's not making a point. Tony's still in bed.
His point...
He doesn't even know he's being mentioned on the radio.
His point...
Listen.
Email him. If you don't believe me, email him.
I don't believe you.
Why would you not believe me?
Because you're looking lying at us while you're reading.
I'm not lying!
That's your lying face.
That's my face!
Well, exactly.
No, you've got a lying face and you've got a truth face.
I haven't got... What's my truth face?
I don't know, I don't really see it that often.
Oh, you're sorry.
wouldn't recognise it, would we?
Tony Stevenson has emailed in. It's a good thing that I'm bringing this up, because no one else brings this up.
It doesn't happen to anyone else.
There's a text.
Go on, then.
One. Mike says, who buys £20 worth of petrol?
Oh, we've read that one, mate.
We could read it again and they won't notice.
Yeah.
You don't have to make up emails. Who buys £20 worth of petrol these days? Perhaps a bubble car owner, I guess. I do.
Yeah, we've done that.
I pay at pump.
I've never paid at pump.
That's part of my what I like to do at the petrol station. I like to try and get £20 dead on.
Yeah, I like to do that.
And then you go over. And you
Tony Stevenson is real. And Tony Stevenson sent me an email saying that that's what happens to him. And it's so annoying that these Muppets that I'm working with can't be bothered to believe a single thing I say. Well, they'll be eating humble pie. They'll be eating humble pie when they get an email from Tony Stevenson telling them exactly. Tony, if you're listening, could you do me a favour? Could you email these Muppets that I'm working with, please? That would be really good. Thanks.
Some of them. Yeah. Where you can press that you want.
All right, all right, all right. Calm down, girls.
That takes the fun out of it for me. That's It's like cheating.
Okay, guys, calm down. We've all had a little bit of fun.
That's his lying face again.
Oh, gets knotted. Terry Duris is a local councillor who's more than happy to come on the show whenever we need to. I suspect he regretted it a little bit this week. Enough of that nonsense. Campaigners have won their fight to stop a massive incinerator being built near Hatfield. The Secretary of State, Eric Pickles, agreed with the planning inspector that the 380,000-tonne facility was an inappropriate development within the Greenbelt. Joined now by Terry Duris, Conservative councillor in charge of waste at Herts County Council. Terry, you messed up here, didn't you?
I beg your pardon?
You've messed up here.
No, we haven't messed up here. Veolia and ourselves, or Veolia in particular, put in a planning application. It went through all the various processes. It was called in by the Secretary of State. It had a public inquiry, which is absolutely correct that it should have. It then went to the Secretary of State for his final opinion, and the planning application was refused. It's as simple as that. But it demonstrates, actually, the democratic nature of the way we do business in England.
This has gone on for years.
It has.
Lots of people were saying you were always on a loser, that this was never going to happen. And the basic the argument that Eric Pickles has come up with is this was inappropriate within the Green Belt. Why wasn't that recognised earlier on?
Because we didn't believe at that time that it would be inappropriate or within the Green Belt. But as I said a moment ago, these assertions need to be tested. And if it had gone the other way by the inspector, and it was, let's be quite clear, it was the inspector who turned down Veolia's planning application for this. But if it had gone the other way, then probably the objectors, who are now the victors, and we accept that at this time, would have said that it didn't go through the proper planning process. So it's the planning process has worked, it's seen to be worked, and we have the decision that we have.
You say they are the victors at this time.
Yeah.
Are you going to appeal, or is that it?
No, I'm not saying that we are going to appeal, because at the present time we have to consider, along with Veolia, what the full implications of this judgment is. Bear in mind also that the inspector's report runs to something like 120-odd pages, so it is going to take some while to digest. Veolia's lawyers and ourselves will have to consider what the next steps may be. And the next steps may be an appeal. On the other hand, it may be that we just say, right, OK, we will go in a different direction.
You say it shows that democracy and the judicial system works. It's cost you, or rather it's cost the taxpayers, a lot of money, isn't it? How much have you spent on this?
That I don't know at this time, and I can't give you an answer to that. But what I would say is that going forward, it would have saved Hertfordshire residents £667 million over 25 years. So the gain from it, and Cathy Rowe was absolutely correct when she said earlier on, and there is no dispute about this, that the principal reasons for the inspector not ruling in favour of the development was the impact on the Green Belt and the impact at Hatfield House. But it would have saved Hertfordshire residents this amount of money. And the other thing that has to be borne in
mind... £500,000 it's cost.
If I may just finish.
£500,000 it's thought the total cost was for this. £500,000.
I can't give you any figure on how much it has cost us.
The legal fees have been?
At this moment in time, no, I don't.
That seems incredible.
No, it's not incredible, because obviously those bills and those costs are still to be generated.
Terry, this is important, because the thing is, it's not your money. So you've just written a blank cheque with taxpayers' money, and you've got no idea how much that is.
You've
got no idea how much of the taxpayers' money you spent on defending this.
What I am saying to you is that the loss of the benefit to Hertfordshire residents going forward. Bear in mind...
That may be, but you've got Terry.
The key thing, Ian...
In your opinion...
Well...
I would suggest the key thing is that you have spent a significant amount of taxpayers' money, and you're claiming, Terry, that you don't know how much money you've spent on legal fees.
No,
not your money.
The key thing, Ian, here...
In your opinion...
The key thing here, Ian, is that we desperately need a form of recycling and renewable energy. Of the 540,000 tonnes of...
Why are you avoiding the question, Mr. Duris?
If you would let me speak.
No, because you're going off on a tangent. We can talk about the problems with the waste in a little bit. Do you know how much of the taxpayers' money has been spent on legal fees for this over the past few years?
At this precise moment, I cannot give you an answer.
£500,000? £1 million?
Do you want to have a conversation with yourself?
No, I'd like to get a figure on how much of the taxpayers' money you spent on legal fees. You must have a rough idea.
Ian, I have told you that at this present time, I cannot tell you what that figure is.
£500,000? £1 million?
I'm sorry, but if you can keep asking the same question and
you
I will
don't
keep
know,
giving you... I cannot give you...
You don't know if you spent £1 million of taxpayers' money. You don't know.
What I do know is that this is very disappointing news, because we have to find...
Terry, why are you avoiding the question? We can talk about the alternatives for the waste in a bit. I'm obviously being stupid here, Terry. Just to clarify, you don't know if you've spent £1 million of taxpayers' money on legal fees. You don't know.
I cannot give you a figure of what has been spent on this project at this time.
Even though it's not your money?
It's everybody's money.
Yeah, but you don't know how much it is.
I said I cannot give you the figure. Now,
why not?
Can we? I came on to move on.
No, I bet you did, Terry. But the taxpayers want to know how much money they spent. They also want to know about the contract that was drawn up, which means the taxpayers also fund the legal bills of the developer Veolia. Is that fair?
I am talking, Ian, about the Secretary of State's decision yesterday to not to uphold the
planning. Have a listen to this. This is your own Tory MP, Grant Shapps, who says the contract that meant that taxpayers were funding the legal bills of developer Veolia, the contracts were drawn up badly.
No, well, I think it was a stupid fight for them to pick in the first place. I think that the contracts were poor. When we got the as much information as we could, we found a lot of the information was redacted. But one thing that was clear was there was a whole exchange rate swap guarantee provided to Veolia. I don't think that was very wise. I think the advice to the county council was very poor. And I think there will be many, many lessons to learn.
And Ian, out of that, one of the key sentences is that there will be many lessons to be learnt. We know that.
It was a bad contract that was weighed completely in Veolia's favour, and taxpayers have paid a huge, massive company's legal bills. Does that seem fair?
I'm not going to get into what our contractual arrangements were.
Well, the fact is that that taxpayers paid Veolia's legal bills. Does that seem fair?
I can't give you the answer to that question at this time. I'm sorry.
Well, that's a fact. That at least a portion of Veolia's legal bills were paid for by the taxpayer. Does that seem fair to you?
I'm not going to make any comment on that.
Seem fair to you?
Well, I'm not going to make any comment on it.
You don't know how much you've spent. It could be £1 million. You've got no idea, and yet you're considering appealing. So it was potentially spending significantly more money.
There might be some people, Terry,
who would consider that to be inappropriate and ineffectual.
Ian, what I am saying is that we are considering what our steps might be. That does not necessarily say that we are going to consider appeal.
Should you not sit down with the person who writes the cheques and add up how much money you've spent before you consider appealing?
I am sure that will be done, Ian.
And is it not shocking, because this has been going on for years, is it not shocking to you, Terry, that you've got not even a rough idea, not even to the closest £100,000, how much money, how much taxpayers' money you spent on this?
I've said to you that I do not have at this time the detail that I
can
give you the answer.
And do you not find that surprising?
Pardon?
Do you not find that shocking that you don't know?
Not on the day after.
But this has been going on for years.
Not on the day after the Secretary of State has actually given the thing.
When will the confidentiality clauses be lifted?
That I can't tell you.
Because it's confidential?
Well, there are confidential...
When will they be lifted?
I don't know, Ian.
With the greatest of respect, Mr. Duris, you don't know when the confidentiality clauses will be lifted. A court case, a legal case that has been going on for years, you can't even narrow it down to the nearest £100,000. There is a potential that you may go on and spend even more money appealing this. You're just wasting taxpayers' money, aren't you?
I haven't said that. There is an opportunity within the decision for the applicant to make an appeal. I am not saying at this stage whether that opportunity will be taken up. What I will say is that we have to find an alternative site and an alternative home, if you like, for the waste that is collected.
And where are you looking at?
Something like 275,000 tonnes.
And where are you looking at for that?
It's not recycled. We have already made interim arrangements outside the county for that. But that is, at the moment, going to have to go to landfill. And that is exactly what we do not want it to have to do going forward. We owe it to the people going forward, to the residents of Hertfordshire and wider afield, if you like, that we do not keep sending rubbish to landfills.
Final point, Terry. Sorry to nail this home. You don't feel you have a responsibility to the residents who pay taxes to let them know how much of their money you've spent on this court case that you've lost?
Of course we have a responsibility.
And when will you be telling them that?
I can't give you that time, but I am sure that in the fullness of time, all the details as appropriate, will emerge.
On Thursday, up to 1 million workers went on strike. Steve called in. He wasn't very happy about it, and he wasn't particularly friendly towards, what do we call them, firemen?
Firefighters.
Have a listen.
I'm getting a bit fed up with these whinging, moaning, no-good teachers who basically can't live in the real world, and I'm also suddenly realised, why on earth do we call firefighters when about 0.01% of their time they're actually firefighting and the rest of the time they're sitting around doing nothing or going in their own gym or keeping themselves fit? I've got a problem with it. I just think it's very strange. And also the fact that they start moaning because they don't live in the real world, because most of them started when they're pretty young. They only have to do 22 years in the service before they can retire. Most of that time is spent absolutely nothing, and they whinge about it constantly. It's unbelievable.
What do you think we should call firefighters, then, if we don't call them firefighters?
I don't know. I don't want to call them anything derogatory, because when they're needed, they do a great job.
Don't they, Jess?
However,
they save people's lives.
I know, very, very, very rarely, to be honest.
But if it's your child or your mum they've saved from a burning building, and they don't save anybody else that fortnight, does that demean the saving that they've done?
No, not at all. But you shouldn't give someone a job title for something they do, should you?
How many people have you saved? I've saved none. I saved my mum once when I did the Heimlich manoeuvre on her. That's it.
I don't really want to go into it, but potentially I have saved people.
Well, when?
I really didn't want to go into it. I used to be in the army, but that's
okay.
Another story.
Okay. Well, why should... Were you called a soldier?
I was, yeah.
How much fighting did you do, Steve?
I wasn't called a fighter. I was called a soldier. I did lots of soldiering.
Okay, so... But you didn't sit around playing Xbox? You didn't sit around, you know, keep it... You were soldiering all the time, were you?
Whilst I was being paid, yeah. During my normal working hours, I didn't sit around doing nothing.
Okay.
Very, very rarely.
Okay, but...
Whereas firefighters do sit around 80% of the time.
Yeah, because they're waiting for fires.
I know, why don't we call them waiterers? Or something, do you know what I mean? I'm not trying to get derogatory, as I say, but the fact is they don't do firefighting, but they will. The minute anyone moans about firemen, they go, oh yeah, they save lives, they put, what about fires? But they don't do that much of the time.
Which is great. Are you saying you want more fires?
No, of course I'm not. I'm saying they should have a proper title that adequately describes what they do. And more to the point, teachers, though, teachers really, really annoy me. You look at what teachers do. They go to school as children.
Yeah.
They go to college, university, and go back in the school.
Yeah.
They have never understood the real world. They think it starts at 9, it finishes at 3, they get an hour break at lunch,
Have you got kids?
Sorry?
Have you got kids?
I have, yep.
So I'm assuming you don't send them to school then?
They passed school. Yes, they did do school.
Okay, so you were quite happy for, what, about 13 years to entrust the education, the future, the shaping of your children's lives with these slackers who've got no idea what it's like to be in the real world. That seems a little bit strange.
The government said they had to be educated.
No, not at school. Not at school. There are other ways around it.
No, I could. There is. I'm technically not capable of teaching them. I don't think.
Ah,
I wouldn't make a good teacher.
Ah. So they have got a skill that you haven't got.
They've got to stop whinging about it. They've got to stop whinging. To be honest with you, I think that the schooling in our country, unless you go private, is very poor. I do believe that.
Steve, listen, I could talk to you all morning, but I've got to go to the travel. I'm a bit late. Thank you. This is a great phone-in, though, guys, isn't it?
What is the phone-in again?
When was the last time you bibbed your horn?
Yeah.
And what is a horn? How do horn work? We've had a physicist.
We've had an expert, a genius. If it's a recording, how can you vary the loudness and ferocity with the pressure? I think it's...
You can't.
Do you remember those actual horns that you got that were like a ball and you'd squeeze it and go...
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't it the same as that?
No. We've discovered it's not. We've moved on from that. There's no air pressure involved. It's electricity or electromagnets. I'll buy that. It's a shame it's not a little cassette recording, so sometimes you could hear it as it flips over to the other. It's auto-reverse.
If that were so, we could do actual messages. Watch out!
But...
You
should have different...
You could record them yourself.
Exactly.
You should have...
Your own voice.
Oh, oi. They're off on a tangent now. Dare I say it, not a particularly good tangent. They... Oh, any more...
Yeah, loads
get out
more.
Of the way.
There's a niche.
Right.
We should arrange this. Let's take it to the den, the dragons.
Duncan Ballantyne's quitting the dragons' den.
Oh,
he was my favourite.
Yeah, but you noticed a trend.
I noticed the trend that since his rather messy divorce that cost him shed loads of money.
Sweet buns.
He's not invested in anything. I didn't watch the last series because the two series before that, he invested in, like, one thing for about I'll give you a tenner and I want 95% of what you've got to give me, baby.
Can we negotiate on that?
No. You can... Okay, I'll give you a tenner. I want 80%, but I want you to have all the business meetings wearing a short skirt.
Can I just go and talk to myself in the corner for a minute?
Of course you can, wee laddie. Lady, wee lassie.
I'd like to take you up on your offer.
Come and give me a big wet kiss with your face, lassie.
Is this meant to be Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
Duncan Ballantyne.
Who?
Duncan Ballantyne.
Who?
Is it not Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
Wait a minute. I'm not playing this game. Is it not Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
Oh, for God's sake.
Do you want me to translate?
Yeah.
Is that Duncan Ballantyne?
Yes.
Yes,
that's
Matt.
What I said.
What did you say?
Is that not Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
What? What are you...
Should I translate?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
What? Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
Who
are you saying? I don't know the name of the person you're... I've not heard of the person you're talking about.
Don't look at me for clues. You're from Yorkshire. Wrong side.
Ask it again. Lines. Ask the question slowly and really think about what you're saying.
You.
I don't know why you're laughing at me. Is the person that you were doing an impression of, is that not Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
What are you doing? Am I in some parallel universe that I don't know? Is it not Duncan Ballantyne?
Who?
For Gary.
Hey, who's your favourite dragon?
Come on, Matt.
Duncan Ballantyne.
Who?
Is
It's Friday. Break it down. It's Friday. Build it back up. It's Friday. Kathy, not joining in with the song?
No.
Whoa. Hey, why?
Well, it's not Friday till about 9 o'clock.
Shut up.
What?
It's Friday all day, man.
No.
All day is Friday. From about 1:30 in the morning until 9:30 at night, that's Friday.
Okay.
Everyone knows that.
Well.
Friday slurps, isn't it? Friday slurps. Morning. Sorry.
You're stealing Wally Webb's act there. He has a synchronised sip.
No, that's just good. No, he's got
Friday slurps. Come on.
Catherine.
Can't TM that.
He has a synchronised sip at 5:15.
Yes.
On Friday, I have a Friday slurps. Kels, you want a Friday slurps?
It's derivative.
You're not having a Friday slurps, Kath?
No, it's Wally Webb's.
It's not Wally Webb's. He has a, what's his quiz called?
Synchronised sip.
See, I can't remember what it's called. Mine's called a Friday slurp. It's Friday. Break it down, Friday. Here we come now. It's Friday. We're going to have some fun on a Friday. It's Friday. It is Friday fun on a Friday. It's Friday. Friday. Take it back to the bridge. It's Friday.
You know this is going out on air, don't you?
It's Friday, and it's in the podcast. Friday. Why are you not? What? Right. Hang on a minute. Listen, Catherine.
I'm not doing it.
Listen.
It's in my contract. I don't rap.
Come here.
I don't beatbox.
Come here. Listen.
What?
Kelly and I laugh at you behind your back.
Fine.
We call you Mum. We say you look like Velma. We say all kinds of horrible, rude things about you. But deep down, we almost care for you.
Right, OK.
So what's your beef, Boyle? What's your beef?
I haven't got beef.
You got beef?
I haven't got any beef at all.
You got beef? You got beef, Boyle?
No,
I can see it.
We're just different personalities. Some of us like to rap. Some of us like to sit back and let you sound like idiots.
And some of us have personalities. Kels, high five.
OK, you can call it personality.
Hey, do you want to sing, Kath?
The words are really simple.
I've put a song in for you that you can sing.
It's called It's Friday. 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 Break it down. Friday, here we come. Friday time now. We're going to have some fun on a Friday time. Everybody, it's a Friday. It's not a Thursday. It's not a Saturday. It's a Friday. Take it back. It's Friday. Kath? Come on, man.
Stop crying.
Why are you ruining our vibe? You're totally killing my vibe. My buzz has been killed.
Your vibe sounds like it's pretty vital.
My buzz has been killed by you, Boyle. Boyle killed my buzz.
Boyle the buzz killer.
Mm. Yeah. That's almost as bad as that. The child snatcher killer from that film. You virtually snatched my child.
To be
my
honest,
child
he had
were a buzz.
He had a point.
Bang, bang.
He had a point. Yeah. He was performing a public service.
We got 7 seconds left. It's Friday. Break it down. It's Friday time. Everybody have some fun. Gonna listen to some songs and do some things. We're gonna talk about local issues, including a man who feeds birds sausages. It's Friday. That bit's true.
I know.
That bit is actually true. We're talking about Grace Holmes and her son Robert. Robert has been living at Hampton House in Northamptonshire for 18 years, and she's worried that he could be moved miles away if Scope insists on shutting it down. We just spoke to the MP for Luton South, Gavin Shuker, who raised Grace's concerns in the Commons last night.
Robert Holmes is 39. I met his mother, Grace, 2 months ago when I was out door knocking in my constituency. She told me about the excellent quality of care that Robert, who has cerebral palsy, receives at Scope's residential home, Hampton House in Northampton. But she also told me of Scope's proposals to close Hampton House.
Well, that was Gavin Shuker speaking in the Commons last night. Elliot Dunster joins me from Scope. Morning, Elliot. Why have you decided to close Hampton House and 7 other places?
Hi, and good morning. Like many of our care homes, Hampton House was opened in the 60s and 70s. And last year, we reviewed all of our care homes. And there were a number that we felt that we didn't believe were good enough for disabled people in 2014. They're large, residential care homes that feel very institutional and they lack privacy. They've often got shared bathrooms, and there's less and less demand for these types of care homes. In the next few years, it's likely that vacancies in these care homes will rise. They may become financially unviable for Scope to run at that point in time, where we'll have to make a much more rushed decision about their future rather than doing this carefully in the responsible
what
way.
What makes you think that these spaces will become vacant? Because I know from experience that all care homes, that quite often there's a long waiting list for people to get in.
Well, we've been working very closely...
Is there a waiting list for Hampton House?
We've been working very closely with local authorities, including those of the residents and for Hampton House itself. And they tell us that they want to move towards different kinds of services as well.
Is there a waiting list for Hampton House?
There's vacancies at Hampton House, and we expect them to increase in the future.
And you couldn't fill those vacancies?
I don't have the details of exactly the contracts with the local authorities with me at the moment, so I can't answer.
But you know that there are people that would fill those vacancies. You know there are people that would need those spaces. I find it very surprising. I mean, I imagine there are vacancies there now, Elliot, because you're planning on winding it down. There will be people who need those spaces, won't there?
I think this is about what Scope is doing is about looking at the types of care that we believe disabled people should be expecting in 2014.
Well, with the greatest respect, we can come to that in a second. You did say that you expected in the next few years there would be vacancies there.
Yeah.
There are only vacancies there now because you're winding it down. There will be people who are desperate for those spaces.
It's local. I mean, as an organisation, our relationship is with the local authority. So it's the local authority that we get our information from about who needs those.
And are you saying that the local authority there are saying there are no people who could do with those spaces?
They're saying to us that they are looking to place disabled people in care settings that they believe are more suitable for the future.
And cheaper.
I don't know about that.
Do you get any money from the council for the people who are residents there?
We have contracts with the local authorities for a number of residents.
What's the weekly rent that the council pay?
Oh, I'm afraid I don't know that.
£700, £900. That's kind of about the average, isn't it?
I'm really not sure about the details of the individual.
And I know for a fact that that several councils, I don't know about this one, but I know that Buckinghamshire County Council mm-hmm. are constantly negotiating every year with care homes and residential homes.
Yeah.
To reduce the amount of money that they pay because they don't like pay. So someone who's in there privately will have to pay more and the council will reduce and negotiate the amount that they pay. So it's a financial decision, isn't it?
The problems that you have raised are definitely problems with the wider care system, and it's something that Scope are working on. That's definitely true, and I think you're absolutely right. But in terms of this decision, as you said earlier, this is a decision for Scope, and we're not making it for financial reasons at the moment. What we're saying is in the next few years, as vacancies rise, they may become unviable and we'll have to make much more rushed decisions. It's actually about looking at the types of care that people are choosing, younger disabled people are choosing to live in the future, and making a responsible decision now.
But what about those people? So where are they going to go?
Well, We've got experience in closing and changing a variety of care homes. Recently, we've closed a home near Oxford, and we've worked with all the disabled people there, and they've all found new homes. They've got an agreed moving-in date.
In the same area or some distance away?
I can't give the details of all the individuals, because it meets their needs and preferences.
So there could be some that are having to move a long way away from their family?
Well, it would be wrong of us to make assumptions when this is the consultation opens in January. We've obviously been talking to families in October.
Well, where would the people in Hampton House go then?
Well, I can't say that now because the consultation doesn't start until January, and we've got experience of closing and changing our care homes, and from our experience, we know that families and residents choose a variety of different options, and it would be wrong of me to say that now.
But Elliot,
you know that a
number of these people, to get their needs met, will have to go some distance away, and that's not fair. It's not fair to break up the communities that have developed within a care home, because people, you know, develop friendships and they develop relationships, but also to then send some of them miles away, that's not fair, is it? That's not fair on them, and it's not fair on their families.
No, and like I said, what we want to do is work really closely with each resident, more importantly, and their families and the local authorities, so that we can help them understand what the proposals mean for them, their options going forward. And we know that many of those residents will choose a variety of different options.
For example?
Well, for example, some may choose to live in other residential care homes. Others may choose to live with a group of friends in a perhaps a smaller setting. Other people may choose something completely different. There's, you know, so the way that social care works today, as the minister said yesterday in the debate in the House of Commons, it's not like the 60s and 70s.
Is this just this horrible, horrible thing where to save money, people who need specific medical and social care are encouraged to move back in with their family?
I don't think so, no. I mean, I speak to a lot of disabled people who, you know, disabled people have fought for many, many years for the right to live independently and for the right to
but
live.
But they can't. I mean, for example, Robert can't. He can't live independently. And his mum can't look after him. She's 78 years old.
I mean, I need to be clear about living independently looks like as well. That doesn't mean someone lives on their own, and it doesn't mean someone lives without care. It's just, you know, we need to make sure that these disabled people have the types of care that meets their needs in a way that we believe is good enough for disabled people in 2014.
But there are some people, Elliot, and of course, if disabled people can live independently, then fantastic, then of course they should. But there are some disabled people, Robert included, who are incapable of living independently. What happens to them and where do they go?
Well, absolutely no one will be forced to live on their own. That's absolutely not the case.
And I'm not suggesting that. What will happen to Robert and where will he go?
Well,
and people like him?
We've got a consultation that opens in January, and as part of that consultation, we'll be working with Robert.
It's closing next June, isn't it?
The proposals currently say that's true.
So why are you not having a consultation now? You've got 11 months to try and sort this out. Why are you leaving it with 5-6 months to go?
Well, we've got lots of experience in making these changes, and if we were to open the consultation earlier, it's likely that it would be more difficult to have those conversations with the local authorities.
No, surely that would make it easier because Robert has been very ill. His mother is worried and is incredibly upset. She was in tears on the phone to me. Surely by having a consultation a year in advance, you are giving these people choices. You are allowing these people some peace and the ability to make more rational, thought-out choices.
Absolutely, and that's why we've been speaking to residents at Hampton House since October last year when the consultations were announced. We've held many meetings with families.
So you're having a consultation 15 months after you announce them. That seems crazy, Elliot, and seems a little unfair on the residents and the families.
Well, I mean, I think the consultation process is part of the formal thing that we, as an organisation doing this responsibly, need to do well with the local authority as well. And what we want to do now is we've been doing that, having that process ongoing since we very first announced these proposals. And our chief executive has been to Hampton House. He's met and spoken to all the residents and families on a number of occasions, and we are very, very, you know, very, very committed to doing this in the right, responsible way, as the minister outlined in the House yesterday, and also as Gavin Shuker rightly said earlier on your interview this morning.
How many places are there in Northamptonshire that could cope with Robert's needs?
I don't have all the information about the wider stuff.
So you don't know the kind of options that might be available to him?
That's pretty worrying, isn't it? Well, I don't personally, but the local authority and the...
So you're just pushing them onto the local council?
We're not pushing him onto the council at all. We're working with him and for other residents.
But you don't know what alternative residences there are for him?
We need to work through the official proposals and the official consultation.
Oh, Elliot, listen, as someone who's got a relative in a care home,
I understand.
That sounds really cold, mate. That sounds really, really cold. It's all well and good you coming out with your jargon. These are people's lives. These are families. These are people who are the most vulnerable. And you don't know how many homes are available in Northamptonshire that could cope with someone who's severely disabled. And you've not made any suggestions as to where he could go.
It would be wrong of me to make those suggestions when the consultation...
No, it wouldn't, Elliot. It would be human of you. It would be humane of you to do that. His mum is 78 years old. Do you know what? She could be dead by the time you get to your consultation. She's not getting any sleep. She's ill. Robert's been in hospital.
And I completely understand the situation, and we really...
Then why don't you draw... Why doesn't Scope draw up a list of potential places? Because, as you know, these places in these residential care homes are really sought after, and despite what the local authorities may or may not have said, there is a huge queue to get in these places. You only get in if someone moves or if someone dies. That's pretty much it. So why haven't you drawn up a list of places that are in the local vicinity and then given them to Grace and said, look, these are your options. There's six that we think would be quite good for him that could cover his basic needs. Why hasn't Scope done something like that? Or is that not your responsibility?
That's not my personal responsibility.
Scope's responsibility.
As an organisation, and we are working with residents and families. I really do understand the situation.
You need to get on a waiting list. You need to put your name on a waiting list, sometimes a year in advance before a space comes up.
The local authorities are telling us as well that they need to look at... They need to look at how they are providing care for disabled people in the future. And what they're telling us is places like Hampton House that are very old-fashioned and have a very institutional feel will not be the types of services that younger disabled people are choosing to live in. And that's certainly what young disabled people are telling us. It would be wrong of us to do this in a rushed way.
No, exactly.
And we need to do it responsibly.
But then
now.
You've got 11 months before you're planning on turfing these people out. I cannot understand why Scope have not sat down with the residents who are capable of having these discussions.
We have sat
and
down
also,
residents.
No, with, and also with their family members and given them a list of alternative places they might like to apply to, because you know for a fact that there is a huge waiting list to get in these places. And if they find out places in January and they're being booted out in June, there's a chance they won't get into those places.
We are working with all the families and with the residents, and we're working with the local authorities to do that, and we will be doing all of those things, and we have met with families and the residents a number of occasions.
But not giving them alternative places they could go to. It's not Scope's responsibility.
We are working alongside families to make sure that we will support all of the families and the residents, more importantly, to make sure that they find somewhere that they are comfortable and happy to live in and that suits their needs.
Final thing in it, and I really appreciate your time this morning. I know you said on a bit longer than we said. We spoke to Grace Holmes this morning. We asked her what she'd like to say to Scope. This is what she had to say.
I would like to ask them, can they sleep at night? Because the residents and the parents can't sleep at night on what they're doing. I think it's absolutely disgusting.
Elliot? Do you sleep at night?
We believe we're making a very responsible decision. I wouldn't be able to sleep at night if I knew that in a few years' time, Grace would be in a worse situation where we have to do something like this in a very rushed way. We didn't have control and we couldn't do it in a responsible way. And that's what we're committed to doing.
Elliot, I appreciate your time this morning.
Duncan Bannentine.
Who?
Oh, come on. Duncan Bannentine.
Who?
Idiot.
Oh, and Pond Life. Is that not in the podcast this week?
No.
That's the end of the podcast.
No, it's not.
Come on.
This week.
We're promised a pond that we could be proud of.
Oh, fingers out.
Council messed it up.
That's the end of the podcast this week.
Concerns that people
hope you
ride the giant heron.
Enjoyed it. You can get in touch with the show, ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. ian.lee@bbc.co.uk.
And 17... £1,000.
There will be no ponds in the podcast. It's not a podcast. If you want to go and do that, you go and negotiate that with the bosses. Actually, quite a clever title I've thought of there, podcast. You can have that and you can stick it up your MP3 player. Right?
Rude.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to this free download from BBC Three Counties Radio, your local radio station for Beds, Hearts and Bucks, on FM, AM, digital radio and online at bbc.co.uk/threecounties.